All right, welcome to Tennis Sucks, Pickleball podcast by Travis Rettenmeyer and Graham D'Amico. This week we have a very special guest, Leah Jansen. And we want to start off by thanking our sponsor, Ruckpack. So take it away.
Okay, I'm going to start with Graham. I've never seen you look this good for the pod.
I had to do it for the studio.
You didn't do it for the studio. Did you? Did you do it? You might have
actually. No. I just haven't changed yet today.
Okay. So you didn't dress yourself, obviously, right?
Of course. I put my own clothes on.
Okay, you put them on, but something picks your clothes for you, correct?
No.
Yes, it does. Can you please just give credit where credit's due to the
person? All right,
person,
yeah. I'm part of a delivery service that gives Threadbeast.
Threadbeast. Not a fitting name, but a beautiful ensemble of clothing, and I'm impressed. Like, you look great.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so that's not even the joke for the day. The joke tells itself. This year in Bear City, Nicholas Bajinski, a.k.a. Tropical, and Graham D'Amico will be making their team professional debut.
It's true. Bags and I are playing.
Pro.
We're playing pro.
Yeah. Graham's already won several pro matches, but he had a really, really good left side player next to him. Old guy, but good. But now he's taking it up a notch, and he and Bags are going to fucking light shit up.
Leah, Bags texts me, and he just says, hey, you want to play pro at Beer City? I'm like, yeah, sure, thinking it's a joke. 2 seconds later, I'm in a group text that says, AK-47, any chance that Graham and I can play Beer City Pro? And she's like, yeah, you're in. And that was it.
Coopy put him in.
That's it.
He calls her AK-47, which was the funniest part of the whole text.
I mean, it's
yeah,
pretty funny.
I mean, you know, Coop, you get in. Yeah, I actually watched your guys' video of Anna Bright versus you two, and Graham has some, like, stellar reset.
Thank you,
like,
right? We call it floppy
touch.
Wrist. He's got the floppy wrist. It's beautiful, soft. He can't hit very hard, but, man, it is delicate and beautiful to watch.
I'm the setup guy.
Very feminine.
I like my partner to be set up to put it away.
Yeah, so let's do a quick intro real quick. Leah, obviously, almost all our pickleball suckers are going to know who you are, but give us a little bit of background really quick, kind of on tennis, how you got into pickle. Give me a little storyline, please.
Tennis, not a whole lot. I mean, I wasn't really all that into it. I played competitively, I guess, but I played, yeah, up a little bit of college, everything up. I actually hated tennis. So
fair enough. We did.
My sister was really amazing, though. I mean, but who didn't hate tennis? and then I just was like a regular person. But Andrea Coop actually started me. I was living in Grand Rapids, and I was just in grad school. And yeah, I just kind of started playing. I actually never been really asked my background story very much. I'm surprised I was asked by you, Travis.
I thought you
like,
were
that
like,
kind of threw me off.
I thought your dad was like a tennis coach, and you were more tennis integrated than that. I thought it was like your childhood.
No, I was. I wasn't that great. Like, okay. I was like a 4-star recruit. I never really took it that seriously. I'm not like other people that acted like I had a great tennis career. I just like wasn't that serious.
Why is that so prevalent in pickleball? Like, Graham will tell me because he doesn't know. Obviously.
I don't know.
And he'll say like, this person was a great tennis player. They fucking sucked. What are you talking about? Yeah, but they said that they played. It's like, Graham, I'm telling you, they didn't play shit. But it's like, they were top 10 in the country.
Everybody has an amazing backstory. I was number one in the Pacific Northwest, but no one ever played. My sister was really good. She went on to win two NCAA doubles titles, but she took it a lot more seriously than me. I actually tried to get her to become my doubles partner when I first started, but she was too burnt out. She like was just over everything.
Does she play pickleball
at
all?
Yeah. No. What? Never. She did once, and she was like, nope, had PTSD. She knows Anna, actually. So her, like, fifth year, she stuck around, and Anna and her, like, kind of knew each other a little bit. So, yeah, that's pretty much my backstory. Okay. And, yeah, now I've been playing pickleball for about 4 years, and it seems like a lifetime.
And you grew up playing and practicing in Grand Rapids, right, at the home of Beer City?
Yes. Well, I mean, I moved here, like with my ex-boyfriend, I had moved here. So that's why I have like roots in Grand Rapids. But pretty much Andrea started me, and she like drilled against me every single day. And that's actually where I really learned. And her and Tyson were like my first two teachers, because I had a background with Tyson because my dad was his coach, his tennis coach.
Yeah, why don't we kick it over to the paddle testing? I know that that's been a huge like conversation recently, and Leah's been a big you know, advocate in that space. So, like, I mean, do you guys have questions for Leia in terms of, like, that aspect of things?
I like that you both are up and nominated for the Dink Awards as a voice in pickleball.
I mean,
influential voice.
Such inspiration.
Yeah, you and Travis, who's more influential in this space than you two?
I mean, I think that Leia had a similar stance that I did. Like, it's if you saw something that was egregious and really obvious, then you had to say something. And regardless of the consequence, it was pretty clear that there were some egregious things taking place from various players and various paddle companies. And she, just like I, spoke. So what kind of made you do that? Like, did you think about, because for me, there was like backlash, you know, whether it be from sponsors and whatnot. Did you think about that when you were speaking on it? Did you care? What's your stance on that?
I mean, when this all started, like, remember, Travis, there was nothing. So, I mean, now I feel like, you know, our voices have been heard. I definitely did learn a lesson in the last year of, it's actually my New Year's resolution to not be as controversial. I feel like it just kind of took the life out of me. You know, I feel like I expelled my energy to things like I couldn't control. And the end of the year, I was a shell of myself. I started out the year amazing, like playing amazing. Right. And then I just got really burnt out. And in fact, and I was just, yeah, I feel like I just wasted a lot of energy. But I mean, I feel like our voices were heard. Now there's a lot more paddle testing. MLP is bringing in good testing as well.
Right.
But yeah, like to think back then, I mean, it was kind of like really, really the wild, wild west.
For sure.
Like,
for sure.
So, when we played in Desert Ridge last year, there was nothing, right? And it was like, it's crazy to think about how much things have changed from a year ago.
No question. And now we see that there's a lot of failing from almost every paddle company. Not one is, you know, excluded from that. And, you know, you obviously play with the Yola. Yola makes amazing paddles. And I think they're doing a great job of actually kind of being on the forefront of the technology of pickleball. Now, we've even heard some
ping pong.
And we've heard some paddle companies are like finding almost loopholes in the testing process to make their paddles better and better and better. So I'm kind of an advocate for that as opposed to saying, oh, that's a detriment, because it's really up to the testers to kind of put a limitation on that. So for Yola and other paddle companies, and I'm sure it feels good to play with a paddle company that is testing that boundary.
I mean, it's just like serves. I don't know. Like, I mean, everybody's trying to have the best equipment now. Like, we're playing for a lot. Paddles matter. I mean, when I go out to the warm-up courts, do you see how many amateurs are using those gearboxes?
Yes, all of them.
I mean,
it's crazy.
Like, it's way, they have way more illegal paddles than the pros. I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, one guy I saw just get completely pegged. So the game's changing. Eyewear's going to come. I think I saw an AJ Kohler story that he thinks it's going to be like this year that something will happen.
That someone will get hit?
Like a pro?
Yeah, someone will get hit and there's going to be eyewear. I mean, this is just like the evolution of the game, and it's getting more athletic and it's getting more fun. And, but there's always going to be a line, right? And people are going to flirt with it. And then people are going to have to implement more, just like in every sport.
Right.
I noticed. So you mentioned, Leia, about being less controversial this year. I noticed that, did you delete your Twitter? Or is that part of your kind of way to not kind of speak out on stuff, or?
No, well, it's more so like I just shouldn't be online, right? And I'm not rich enough to pay somebody to do my stuff. And so I just like, it's just, I think I hear Ben say a lot, he's not online, and it's just better not to. And it's easier for me to kind of stay off Instagram, because like the algorithm slows down and everybody posts a million stories. But I'm just trying to stay offline now. That's like another goal. Like, just, it's better for me just to hear less noise.
Yeah, it's good that you're conscious of that, because I think there's a lot of people that really do have an issue with that. Me, I certainly can get immersed in it at times. But for me, it's like, I never was on social media ever until I started playing pickleball probably 2 years ago. So it's kind of like a new world for me. Like, oh shit, how does all this work? And people are putting these ridiculous stories out there and, you know, clickbait this, clickbait that. So I kind of have a slightly different perspective, but to your point, I think for me, it's maybe a good thing this year to stay under the radar a little more, but I don't think that's possible.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it's not possible. I can't not talk.
I mean, That's the thing. It's like I would love. I actually tweeted about this, like the turnaround in Irina Sabalenka's game. Like, I would love to like turn my emotions around like her. Like, she's really inspiring me too. But I know it's like a process, and I know I'm gonna get out there and I'm gonna lose my cool sometimes because it's just reactions. So
do you know who that is, Graham?
I think that's good.
Irina Sabalenka.
Oh, I thought she was talking about Irina Tereshenko.
Hold on, who is Irina Sabalenka? Graham,
she is now the back-to-back winner of the Australian
Open.
A,
man. Fucking guy. So Graham doesn't watch any sports, but he reads so that he has like topics to talk about with people, but he's never watched a sport.
You don't even watch tennis?
Mm-mm. I watch pickleball. That's the only sport I watch.
Same now.
And only because I've never watched any sports until now.
Yeah. So like a guy will walk in with like a Pittsburgh hat.
You don't even watch tennis, Travis?
Nope, not anymore. I'll watch like highlights, and there's maybe three players that I'm really interested in watching, and outside of that, I have no interest.
Oh, I just kind of got back into it. Now yeah. I'm like a big time watcher.
Oh, that's cool. That's good. Maybe I'll get there. Like slowly but surely, I've been watching more in the last month, 2 months than I had probably in the past year and a half.
Speaking of getting back into things, Leia, you came back to singles this year after a break. I think Travis and Graham had called that maybe we'd see you
right
back. Talk us through like
no,
decision.
I saw that.
Yeah, by the way, I know the gist.
It's our like, only, it's our only prediction we've gotten right so far.
Certainly me. I get
so,
everything wrong.
Actually, it was only like the pundits that kept me out. Well, I mean, it was like I said, I just got exhausted, and I think Alex Zverev spoke about this on like Breakpoint, and I was happy like someone like a prominent like athlete spoke on it, where he was just like, you know, my doctor told me that you'll never be able to play for more than 5 hours, but if you tell me, I mean, obviously what he does is a lot more, but my doctor told me what I do is insane, and I do it for twice the times, you know, sometimes I'm out there for 10 to 12 hours, and then I do it times four.
Right.
No, and then I do it the next weekend. And then I do it the next weekend.
I don't think they know that Alexander Zverev is also diabetic. So if you did watch him at the Australian Open, he was pricking his finger, taking his blood sugar, and then moving forward. So she's related.
Yeah, for sure. And like what he does and what he expels is completely amazing, but he plays one match and then he has 2 days rest, or, you know, gets to recover, where, I mean, by no means am I saying I'm a professional tennis player, but what I was expelling myself through was a lot. But it was only the pundits that kept me out for that long. Like hearing your guys' stuff and everybody's stuff, I was just like, well, it's good. I really do need to take a break. But I actually text Connor right when I got done. And I was like, I mean, I thought I was going to beat her and I was going to walk out and I was going to be done. And I thought I was going to beat her. And then I just like, I couldn't make it. I gassed out and I text Connor. I was like, I can't go out like that. I'm coming back. And then everyone was like, you know, how long do you think it's going to be? And I was like, oh shit, now I got to wait a long time. But you know, in this merger, but it was good. Like I got healthy. I got like, was able to get in good shape. I became a better doubles player, even though my results didn't show it. I worked on a lot of things in doubles and I got good at it, and it was good. It was a good break. And now I'm glad I'm back and we have the progressive draws, and I'm not going to play every tournament, and it's going to be a lot better.
How many tournaments are you committed to play this year?
I am committed to play, I believe. I mean, well, it depends. Like,
if MLP,
I mean,
and
so
PPA
are we going
to
be required to play more because like, a lot of MLPs are getting canceled.
I don't think a lot of them will get canceled. I just think early portion of the year is in jeopardy, but I think they'll all be in play for Premier, which is what you'll obviously be in.
Well, so when's the first Premier? Because that's like in March, isn't it?
It's supposed to be in February, isn't it?
At supposed Mesa, to be, but we're Mesa. Not certain that's going to happen.
That's, yeah, that's that one's debatable.
Frame. Middle of February is supposed to be the first one.
And then there was supposed to be one in March. And I really think, you know, in talking to Andrea about like what goes into it onto with like events and like no merger has per se happened, I think March is kind of in jeopardy right now.
Probably. But we'll see.
You know, it will depend. But like, I think I'm going to probably play 14 to 16. And I think I'll probably play 9 to 10 MLPs. Singles tournaments.
Okay, gotcha.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to play all the progressive draw singles only, anything outside of that. And just to
I can't believe you play singles.
Thank you for that.
He just got, I just saw today in points, you're number 10 in the PPA in singles, men's singles.
No, not that you're bad. It's just like the toll it takes on your body. And I always thought you had like, you were limping at times. And I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? Like, what is wrong with him?
I'm an idiot.
He's not smart. What do you mean? What's wrong with him?
I intend to rectify that with far less singles this year and be aware that I am 40 and that And I don't think I was limping often until this fucking thing with my knee, which made it infinitely worse. But but either way, it was far more taxing than I was aware of. And the singles days are excruciating and brutal. Those won't happen anymore.
Yeah.
I'm gonna probably play two events this year.
With me.
One with you and one with Nicholas Bags Tropical Ball.
Fucking A. We better get dubs this time in the main draw.
I'm down.
I mean, we sucked in the main draw last time, which was my bad.
But you guys played the points draw?
We played TOC. We lost first round to Quaka and some other dude.
Who'd you guys lose to?
Oh, it was a bad loss.
We played like shit. We had game points game two also.
Quaka, Patrick Quaka.
Patrick Quaka and some other guy.
He's having some good wins now.
Shit, he's good.
Yeah, ours. Best win. It was the best
and
win
then,
of his career up
I
to that
we
point.
We got semis of the points draw. We won like four matches. Is that right? Four?
No, we won two.
What? No.
We won two.
That's not true.
That's true. Mark that down, Leo.
Okay, whatever.
We went two. We went two and two.
I'm going three and two then.
Was Travis nice to you?
No.
I was wonderful.
Did you see him in the Anna Bright? You said you watched the Anna Bright thing. You see how he talks to me?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you've had it firsthand. Yeah. It's horrible.
I'm way nicer to her. And I'm also very nice to you.
No, he was way nicer to me. He wasn't just like, you got to move. Like, that's mine. Get out of my way.
You fucking ass. We actually might work better like that if we talk to each other. Well, you fucking got to take the middle. What are you doing, you dumbass?
we might do better like that. It actually would work better.
Yeah, we probably work better. Like, just straight up, just bash the shit out of one another.
Going back slightly, we kind of touched on the kind of MLP events and stuff. But curious, Leo, about your experience going through the merger and the player collective, just general thoughts on that. Maybe these guys have more specific questions.
Yeah, I do. When the player collective kind of came to be, you know, it was something that I was kind of aware of and you know, maybe listening in and kind of hearing what everyone was saying. Did you feel like it was in the best interest of the players at that time to move one by one? Because I was always of the belief, as a collective, I was always of the belief that every individual case was so different that they needed to go case by case and contract by contract and player by player. And I didn't think there was a lot of weight personally in the players collective, just because so many players were, you know, maybe not even in Challenger, or there were a lot of Challenger players. And I just didn't think there was a lot of leverage there. Do you have any input on that? Cause I don't know how involved you were with that. I think it was a great idea. I think their hearts were in the right place, but to me, so many of these players are replaceable.
Hearts are in the right place. You know, obviously, but if you don't have, you know, like in tennis, they have Novak Djokovic, right? I mean, that's why, like, I'm a big fan of Novak Djokovic.
Yep.
My sister's husband during COVID, like Novak was one of the top players that like was like, no, like the number, he was night ranked number 60 at the time, making Grand Slams. And that, like, you know, he was about to take all this time off, which was going to kill him. He's like, I don't need it. You know, and he gave the money to them. And I became a big Novak fan. And we just don't have that. So the heart's in the right place. But if you have Challenger players really wanting it, well, you know, of course, like, and we need the top players to really stand. And it's going to be a case by case for a really long time. Like, how long has tennis been around? Like, I'm sure like no organization was around when you were playing.
No, not at all. And I think that we actually tried to do what Novak individually has done, but for guys like Rafa and Federer, who I was a huge fan of, and I'm also a far bigger fan of Novak now than either of them, they didn't want to change anything because the status quo was so beneficial for them. So I think from the pickle side, it's like, there's maybe four people who can really move the needle. Obviously, Ben and Anna Lee are at the forefront of that. And if they aren't going to come forward and say, hey, this isn't right, we want the players who signed earlier to this to kind of spread this money evenly, then nothing's going to happen. It's not going to change anything.
And I mean, let's be honest, like how much money is Novak making? You know, that's why I'm far more of a fan, you know, of them than Federer or Nadal, of him for that same reasoning. But he's making like how much other money, like, you know, Ben and Anna Lee are not making that. To us, they are making a ton.
Right.
But, you know, to them, the status quo is like they're to them. Well, you know, of course, it's not 40 million, you know, it's not a Nike deal.
And tennis is also making a lot more money as of now, which may change in time. But are you familiar with what Novak did?
No.
Okay, so let me give you a slight education. So he set like a, I'm serious, like a base salary for players that were 150 to 250 in the world. If you are in that number, where before you would have $75,000 worth of expenses, you came out in the red every year. Now you have a minimum base salary of, I believe, $150,000 if you're in that. So now you can afford a coach, you can afford training. So Novak took a portion of the money away from the top, where the elitist guys were making $40, $50 million a year, and said, no, we don't need this much. This doesn't make any sense. The game is better. It's in better hands long term. The quality of play will improve. If we just take this top 2 to 3% of money and dribble it down to the guys between 150 and 250 and allow them to have a base salary to ensure their well-being. Nobody fucking did that before.
Gotcha. That's Stud. Cool.
Fucking cool.
All right.
All right. So, Leia, you had said that you don't necessarily want to have controversial, but do you have any hot takes for this year? I mean, like, first of all, like, where do you see pro pickleball going from this point on? Do you have any predictions?
Predictions? I don't know. I do think, you know, now if we hopefully all get paid, you know, the year end will look a lot different. I think I saw a comment, you, Travis, make it on social media, like the top 10 will look different. I definitely do, with a lot of the new talent coming in and people just investing. I'm investing a lot more in my game, you know, and we're all pushing each other to get better. The stakes are getting higher. So I think the top 10 will look a lot different.
I think our clarification is what do you think, like, from a media perspective, do you think that professional pickleball actually has a long-term trajectory as a spectator sport, that now that all this money is being pumped into the sport and there should be better quality of play, better quality of production, that at some point we're going to see, you know, a PPA Sunday with 500,000 viewers watching, as opposed to, you know, the very sparing eyes that we have relative to the amount of people that play?
Well, I think it's up to us, right? Now they've invested a lot into us. It's up to us to live up to this level. So, you know, if you're going to be taking this money and tanking, it will definitely, you know, show in your play. So it's definitely up to us to put out the product, you know, now.
I like that.
And I just think a lot of that is dependent upon, you know, what happens to us though in the next couple months.
Sure. That's a good take.
And I'm not saying you guys specifically, but if the pros are guaranteed the money regardless of results, are they going to get better?
I mean, that's the fear in a guarantee, right? If you're a salary worker and you're getting X amount, you work this amount, are you going to be putting in that much as if you're working off of commission? We kind of face that, you know, question in every day to day. And I think that it's up to the person. Like, I don't think, and this is what I told, you know, teams, when the people would talk about Travis, like, oh, is he going to tank? I'm like, I know Travis. I play with him. There's just like no humanly way possible. He's going to go out there and just be like, I'm going to lose this match. Like, there's no way,
yeah.
You know? And I think so. It's just kind of up to the person. I know for me, I'm more motivated. I don't know why. It's just like, you know, stakes are higher. Like, we're being seen more. I'm motivated more to prove people paid more that I'm better, you know?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's still obviously a monetary motivation, which is, you know, we still all have sponsors and maybe we have matching with our sponsors and we want to attract people. So, you know, that's where, like, we go back to the social media stuff. That's just such a big portion of pickleball at the moment, kind of putting yourself out there and trying to interact with fans, people who are embracing the sport. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if there are people who have that guarantee. And I think there will be a few, and I have some in my head that I've already pinpointed.
Go ahead and say them. You got any Leia that you think
aren't
going to
work very hard and are going to fucking tank. And that's sad, because for me, it's simple. It's simple too. Like, I don't have the ability to walk on the court and be like, I just don't care that much. I just don't really have that. Sometimes maybe a little less motivated than others, but you know, hopefully when it's the bell starts or the bell dings, it's like, all right, let's fucking compete. Let's get it going.
Yeah. I mean, the people doing that keep doing that. You know, I don't want to rile them up.
No, for sure.
I'm going to go on. I'll say one.
Go ahead.
Kwang Dong.
Never, ever possible.
He's definitely just cashed in.
I just dream of having his focus.
He's not even injured. He's not even injured, actually.
He's in the lab right now, like working on shit.
No, he's on the beach enjoying himself somewhere in the Bahamas.
Stop it.
With his paycheck. Stop it.
He's literally, I think he was traveling through Vietnam.
That's not allowed.
They traveled with a bag of balls and they were on the streets in Vietnam fucking striking balls, all right? Working on the two-handed roller, which is money, by the way.
So, Leia, how bad was it playing with Travis? Is he possibly the most hated person in pickleball, you think?
Yeah, be honest. Like, where do you think I stand in, like, top five?
I definitely don't think he's the most hated. But to be honest, it just depended on the day and how Travis was feeling. You know, if he was hurt and feeling like shit, and obviously some stuff off court was annoying him, probably wasn't great, you know. I did play with him through that, like, whole... You know, when a lot of off court stuff is going on, that's tough, you know. And I'm definitely guilty of that as well. I don't think I'm the easiest person to play with either.
Oh, you're not. You're definitely.
So it's a match made in heaven, right?
Yeah. But I think there's a way that we could have been like more truthful, you know, like more just I'm feeling
we
like
we were both
shit.
Definitely I think that like when
trying
we play
to be
a
nice.
Couple this year, we're both being more truthful. But to be honest, that's why I'm happy I mixed around.
Yeah.
Now I know what I'm looking for because I know I can't be fake out there. And sure. If you're playing 20 tournaments, you can never just be fake with somebody. Like eventually that's even worse, right?
I think it also sucked and for us that I think we had five or six quarters and four of them we lost in like a third game where we had looks and we just never. Yeah. So it was like there was almost almost like PTSD, like you said. It was like, fuck, here we go again. Like we're right there and here we go again.
It happened, but here's the thing, Travis, you got through, you made a bronze. So the problem was me because the same thing that happened with me and Federico, and I've been having the same issue with, you know, that's my goal this year. You know, you have to go into these matches and just finish. And it is a mindset.
Sure.
The same thing happened to me and Andre. Like we're up a game in the close second game with Anna. And yes, James gets hot, but eventually I have to, you know, just start winning those matches.
But I played way fucking better when I played with Jade. And I mean, honestly, a lot of that, and you commented, I had to do with when I switched to the engage, like I became a different player, had a lot more confidence.
I mean, the 0-2 is a tough one though.
Yeah. Especially when we played in like Denver and it was altitude and I got there late. It was like, I don't know where the fucking ball's going. I have no idea what's going on. But then
well,
when I switched
you
to the engage,
also just can't fucking breathe in Denver.
Yeah.
I'm never playing at altitude again. Like
I just need to get there early. I don't mind if I get there early, but I was in New York and got there late and it was not, it was bad. Bad, bad, bad.
Did you see Federico and Connor playing in Denver singles?
No.
So they had come from New York and they came to Denver and they somehow were trying to play singles. So they got in like 1 a.m. and just go out there. I mean, obviously in New York, you know, for the draft, and they both were just like not breathing, took losses that they normally wouldn't have taken. It's a very, very, very tough place to go and play. Yeah, yeah. And I think people underestimate it.
I did.
Leia, you actually mixed it up for your upcoming tournament, right? Do you want to talk us through who you're playing with this PPA?
Yeah, so I'm mixing it up in the next couple. I'm playing with Susanna Barr at this one. What inspired it was I played with her. She filled in for Etta with the Breakers. And I just think as a right side player, she brings a lot to the table. She's very unorthodox. And Travis, you and I played against her. I mean, I think she's very underrated. I hate playing Susanna. Yeah. It's like,
well, in that match in particular,
the worst thing possible.
In Red Rock, she was nasty that day. She was ripped. She was killing me with the forehand up the line.
She plays with such small margins. So, yes, you are taking risks there. But because you're playing with those small margins, kind of like Kwang Dong does in singles, when he's on, it's very, very tough to play because those margins, they're so deadly. And that's how she plays doubles. And she gives you different looks that you know, we all play so traditional. This is where the Kawamotos are also very deadly, is they give you different looks. So I think she's a very, very underrated player, especially for her age, especially as a right side player.
Yep. And then in mixed, you have Jack Monroe.
Yeah, so I didn't, I have, I'm doing the first couple with Andre, and we had a miscommunication, and he's pretty, I understand why he's upset, but I would have loved to play with Andre, but I thought he wasn't going to Desert Ridge because he said Mesa. So I was like, oh, Mesa. So the last second I was looking for somebody, and I was like, you know, I know Jack from Austin. He's a lefty. I just, you know, I love playing the left. Why not?
Yeah.
So that was kind of a miscommunication, but Jack, I mean, I think Jack's up and coming. I mean, too. He gets a lot of good play in, yeah. You know, all the time.
There's other, the matchups for that event. Catherine Parento is playing with Christian Alshon. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, good team. Yeah, Alshon's a hell of a player. He's probably top 3-4 athletes on the tour, and can take over a match, can get super hyper aggressive, and he's big enough and long enough. I actually think mixed is probably his best. Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously singles he's fantastic, but I think he's actually found himself as a right side player in men's doubles more than he is as a left side player. But on the left in mixed, he's very authoritative. Catherine obviously is probably the best soft game player for women, so that's a very formidable pairing. I think they'll do well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're not playing them?
I'm not playing Phoenix. I just didn't want to do three times across the country in a month, so I will play Mesa. And I think, like, based on our contracts, the merge goes through, I can miss 6 or 7 of the 1,000, which are the lowest level events, and I intend to miss those 6 or 7. Mm.
Graham, do you know if the draft is happening soon? What is the? Did we talk about that yet?
I think it's happening soon. We don't have a date, but the merge, I think the merge is, like, kind of close, and this time I'm thinking it could actually happen.
It's going to happen.
I know I've been negative. It's not going to happen. The tone I'm hearing now, I think it definitely could happen in the next week or so. And then they're going to want to pull the draft right after that.
Are we able to discuss any, not details of that, but like why we think it's going to happen now that the terms have changed?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I have a question. If you guys can then answer that and then elaborate on once it happens, how long is it going to take to get everything up and running?
I think they're going to try to go really fast.
Because
they've already set up the sites and the events to happen in these places, like let's say middle of February. So if the merge is actually signed and that funding is completed, right, then they have the draft as fast as possible after that because the draft is set up and ready to go too. Like they could pull that in 2-3 days time. So let's say the merge gets signed by end of this week. Draft might happen middle of next week. And then we can have our middle of February event in Mesa, right? Yeah. I mean, I think that's very possible.
I think they'll get it done, Leah. I know it sounds like very optimistic. But I'm just trying not to be optimistic anymore. No, I hear you. But there's so much loot behind it. And I think that there's enough experience about putting these events together quickly that they're going to get it done.
You know what the sense is that's different this time before is like, I think the team owners and the PPA realize that we're kind of like one more of these, it didn't happen moments away from just ruining it. And so it's like, now it's like, if it doesn't happen, then it really may never happen.
Yeah, everyone's just going to be like, fuck this. Because there's already a bunch of owners who are like, who were so enthusiastic previously, we're done. Fuck this. Yeah. We've had enough.
And I know, and that's why I think the players are like that too. Like,
for sure.
I wish Kansas City had never happened. Like, I wish none of this had ever happened.
Same.
I just want it done. Let's go back and we start playing again because it's been almost like just defeating.
Yeah, and let's play and let's earn our positions. Like that's always been my issue is I don't like the fact that a conversation that you had or a side you chose warrants you to have a better outcome monetarily. Like let's earn our positions, let's win, and if we win we get paid appropriately and you know that should be the way it is.
But I think more than even the owners and the players being sick of it, I think there's a realization that the public is sick of it. And that's what the biggest concern is. Like, hey, you'd pull this one more time, I think you lose the public. And maybe you already have. I think that's the biggest fear. Because that's what's most important.
The brand has been damaged.
Is the actual people who are going to watch the sport or interested in it. That's what's most important at the end of the day. Because that's where eventually the money comes from that takes care of all these people.
Right. Without those people, they just
want to watch it at this point. And they just want to see some good pickleball. Correct. And that's what I hope a lot of people remember as well. Like so many people are invested in this. Like it's now, I don't care if you think your contract is this, that, or the other thing. It's like for the sport, we need to start producing as players. But I hope I hope all of this just gets finished so we have that opportunity.
Leah, do you think the MLP format is kind of critical for the viewership of the sport? Last episode, we were talking about why people don't watch pro pickleball, and curious to know what you kind of think about that in relation to the tours. And like,
I mean, a lot of it is just like we're in its infancy, right? But I mean, obviously, something needs to happen with the formats and stuff like that. I think the level of athlete has a lot to do with it as well. Now that we're getting a lot more eyeballs on it, I mean, I never used to pay attention to anything like how I look out there, what I'm doing, how I'm working out. Like, you know, it's really in its infancy. So back in like, I don't know, the 70s, like how much was tennis being watched? Or even I think it got brought to the forefront in like the 80s and 90s. Actually, I think the 70s was pretty popular. But either way, it's not in schools yet. It's not in colleges yet. It really doesn't even have its grassroots yet. I think Connor Garnett put out a tweet about how, you know, you need to get in the schools, get the kids watching, all of this. Like, I watched tennis because that's what I grew up with. That's right. What my parents watched. And now we kind of are waiting to see that with pickleball. So I think it's a little bit unrealistic to expect it right away.
I think that's a good comment by Connor, because I would guess 95%, maybe even higher, of the players aren't in school, right? So if you have the young kids who are playing in elementary school and actually create a fan base where they're excited. My take has always been, and I know Graham hates this, but the fact that there's like four different networks that are broadcasting a singular event. So you have YouTube, CBS Sports, Fox Sports, ESPN Plus. He's like, fuck, I can't even find it. Like, I don't even know where I'm watching. And so that becomes very
irritating.
I just
go to Pickleball TV now.
Right. PBTV is great. It's fantastic. And I'm really excited about that. But I think the marketing needs to improve a ton, you know, just to showcase like, okay, we have, let's say, Leah versus Anna Lee tomorrow, 3 p.m. Check it out. Like, and then you really promote that. And then beyond that, I do think that the only way, in my opinion, that this has a long-term trajectory is that MLP thrives and the players that are immersed in a singular community alter the fabric of that community, just like every other league. I don't think people care too much about an individual player, not enough to support a tour, not enough for great sponsorship. I think even tennis can kind of attest to that they've struggled to promote guys like Medvedev, even, who's, you know, 6 Grand Slam finals. And so to me, the MLP format is really, really critical to pickleball thriving in the future.
Nice use of thrive. I'm impressed.
I should have said strive.
No, thrive was perfect.
I did
perfect.
Use it correctly.
You did.
Where you used strive.
I'm being perfect. You're, I mean, serious.
I did rewatch that episode, and Graham did use it incorrectly.
I did too. You're right, I did.
Boom.
In my mind.
And then he tried to defend it for like 3 minutes. Did you notice that? This is what I deal with.
Well, in my mind, I was saying to myself, we need to strive to get there or be that. And instead, you're right.
Thank you for thinking, Graham. Thank you.
Why I said good use of thrive.
No, I'm just saying, I know that was hard for you. Thank you.
All right. Well, we are at the end of our topic. So did you guys have any other things you wanted to ask Leah?
How do you feel about this formal studio compared to being at the courts at Crescent Lake, which it's Monday night tonight?
I think the courts is more you guys. And I liked your guys' courts vibe. You guys are actually one of the few that I like listening to, because you guys will always say it. I always listen to the people who say it and are at least more than like 3% accurate, you know? But how do you guys feel about this as podcast hosts? Do you feel responsible for spreading misinformation? Because I think I've heard Travis comment on, like, you know, this is where Zane needs to like be a little bit more accurate. Do you guys feel like you need to be accurate, like, because people watch you and you're sending stuff out?
I'm becoming more aware of it, especially recently, because, you know, I don't know that we spend enough time, in all honesty, preparing for this. And so the facts we're getting are facts that we're probably hearing through different avenues, right? We're not researching it ourselves. And so I may say something that I think was correct because I heard it from somebody. And then I find out, usually after we do the pod, I'll see comments that say, hey, you were wrong about this. You're wrong about that. You're wrong about this. And I want to take all those notes down and then the next pod correct them all. But it's not like, it's obviously not intentional. It's like, how much time are you going to spend researching your topics ahead of time and then stay to those topics and not veer off and talk about something that's fun and exciting that you heard, you know, 2 days ago?
I would say on average, Graham and I are infinitely more accurate than most, because we're not attempting to to have a clickbait out there and be like, oh, she did this or he did that, you know. And, and I'm going to call you out again, Jimmy, because you're clickbait guy number one. Just spew bullshit left and right, and then, you know, proclaim it as like fucking big news, buddy. Fake news, bro. Fake news. So yeah, we try as much as possible.
Here's the reason why I asked, because this is my experience. Like, I'm drilling the other day, like just working on some stuff, and a 3-0 gentleman just comes up to me and goes, oh, he's about to use my cord afterwards. He's like, I was just listening about Leia Jansen on a podcast, and oh, I see her here at the gym. I'm like, oh, and he's like, and because I don't like hearing stuff anymore. So I don't like it when people like send me, I get sent a lot of stuff. I'm like, oh, please don't send me it. and it was about like the new contract. And, you know, I think in the other day I had Andrea sent me the Dink article. You know, we just live in the day and age where, like, you know me, I'm a pretty open book. You know, someone can call me up and
get the truth.
Be like, hey, is this accurate? Is this, you know, I'm a pretty decent source about myself.
Right.
But so I think a lot of some stuff, yeah, I think could be for clickbait or could be just to get people listening, because to him, he could, like, he thought it was like the juiciest news like right. ever. And I was like, you know, none of this is accurate, right? Like, yeah. None of it.
Yes. Yeah, so I think
so
three...
it's just so funny.
The three that got me at Jimmy were, one, which you can say, he said that I paid you to play with me. That was the only way I could get you to play with me. That was one. Two was that I was arrogant to draft myself.
I didn't
myself.
Know I'm that good at mixed, huh?
And you got that loot, bro. You got that loot on a big ticket.
And Travis actually is offering money right now for partners, as funny as that is.
Are you actually?
Yeah, I got like seven men that I believe are left side dominant. And I said, if you don't make a final with me in five events from the left side with me on the right, then we'll put 10,000 in your account.
Wow. What people are these?
Well, all of them have partners and we respect the partners, but it's like,
I don't respect the partners.
Riley, okay, is one. We have Federico. We have Hayden. We have, who are the others? Do we remember? No, we had Jimmy, James Ignatovich. Yes, Daxter, we had James. So that's four. And then I think we had Garnett on there, but, yep. And I love Karner, but he's probably the last on that list for me. And then I don't remember. Maybe we had one or two more that were just like guys that were really good on the left, so I can sit my old ass on the right and just hit fucking forehand dinks.
And sit backhand. I think
and
you're
sit backhand.
I think that's good.
Yeah, because my backhand.
Your main thing
sus.
Is you just kind of gas out, but you're steady and you have a good one-handed counter. Like, you can shut that down.
Yep.
And his cross court forehand dink is way better than his left side backhand dink. It's way better.
I think my backhand dink isn't good, but I actually think my forehand right side dink, not being arrogant, but I think it would be,
it's pretty good.
It would be maybe the best forehand
dink. Can you roll it?
I roll the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And I can lob it and I can attack
it. Yeah, I've just never seen you there.
Yeah, no one's ever seen me.
No one. He's a right side player and he won't do it.
The left.
I don't get it.
But I haven't played with anybody good enough in men's to be like, okay, you take left. But yes, I get tired playing left. I don't want to get tired. I want to sit my ass on the right. Like, I know what I am. But yeah, we got 10 G's going.
How long is Hayden playing with Callan?
I think they're set up for like the first six or eight events. But I love Callan. Callan's a great guy. Like, I don't blame Hayden for one bit. But to me, Hayden's gotten so fucking good. And
Hayden's a beast.
I think he's insane. I think he's like on the come up crazy. It's amazing how much hand speed he has, how hard he hits the ball for his size.
Tardio and Daescu were on there also.
Tardio and Daescu were on there as well.
That's the other two.
Yep.
Oh, Andre. I'm a big Andre fan too.
Big Andre fan. Like, yep. He's steady.
He's really good.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I think we're done. Tennis fucking sucks. Hate it. It's the worst sport ever.
Leia, we'll do a better job about contacting people before our we'll get better. You know, the longer we do this, the more time we can spend on it. You know, the more sponsors we get. And then
hey, you guys actually aren't even
that
bad.
Hating on us.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But we can be better about it.
Yeah, but I do want you guys to know that clip that you guys had were like, and then you tagged me in it. I was like, yep, because I was planning on maybe
coming
playing
back.
In Vegas, and I was like, not
like,
playing in Vegas now.
Nowhere.
Like,
a couple events, she'd be like, I'm back.
You just didn't want to give us the. To feel good, to yeah, be yeah, right yeah. that quick.
I mean, it wasn't just you. I think it was a few. I mean, it was a lot of people. But I thought it was going to beat her. I did. You know, do you know what a great walk-off that would have been?
Oh, that would have been nasty.
Mike, see ya.
That would be like the Sampras 1000 US Open. You got that.
All right.
All right, Lay. Thanks, Lay. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Tennis sucks.
See ya.
Go rock yourself.